Chapter 27. Truth. A battle raged. It was a scene from hell, as men seethed in the city streets under torchlight. The castle had held until nightfall, but the enemy hadn't withdrawn under cover of darkness. It was obvious to Eric that a change in command had taken place, for suddenly he was facing the same motley mercenaries he had faced since the war began. But now they were acting in coordination, using their numbers to good effect and grinding down the defenders. Eric directed his men along the southern wall of the keep as the invaders attempted to fill the moat with anything that would give them a means of reaching the wall. Furniture, broken wagons, dirt, anything they could find was being thrown into the water. The defenders were shooting as many arrows as humanly possible, but the attack was unrelenting. Manfred peered over the wall at the sea of humanity, thousands of soldiers pressing toward the ancient keep. "This hardly looks good," he said. "You have a knack for understatement," said Eric. He put his hand on Manfred's shoulders, pushing down slightly. Manfred ducked as some rocks thrown by slingers on the roofs of the buildings on the other side of the moat whizzed by.
"How do you do that?" asked Manfred.
"Do what?"
"Know when to duck."
Eric smiled. "I saw the slingers crawling on the roof at sundown. I've been keeping an eye on them. It gets to be a habit.
If you live long enough."
Eric said. "What sort of shape are we in?"
"I just told the prince that if we can keep them from getting ladders to the wall, we should hold until morning without much difficulty. The tricky part is going to be getting to the eastern gate to admit the armies of the east."
Eric said, "I told Patrick I'd lead a sally at dawn."
Manfred laughed.
"So did I."
"You can't," said Eric.
"Why not?"
"Because you're the Baron, and I'm just a
bastard."
"Yes."
Manfred said, "But you have a wife, and I don't."
Eric said, "That means nothing."
And he knew the words sounded just as hollow to Manfred's ears as they did to his own.
"You'll have to come up with a better argument than that," said Manfred.
"How about you're a noble, and I'm not? You have people depending on you."
"And you don't," said Manfred. "Besides, doesn't a knight captain in the prince's army carry the office of court baron with it?"
That's different. I don't have estates and tenants who depend on my protection. I don't have to administer justice or sort out legal wrangles the courts can't solve. I don't have cities and towns, villages and... It's not the same."
Manfred smiled. "Are you sure you wouldn't rather be baron?"
Eric said, "You have father's title."
"There is that."
Manfred glanced over the wall and said, "Is there no end to them?"
Eric said, "Not that you'd notice."
For a moment they rested, crouching behind the wall. Eric said, "How is it you never married? I thought the Duke of Ran had someone in mind for you."
Manfred laughed.
"The lady came to visit, and I think I failed to impress her."
Eric said, "I find that hard to believe."
Manfred looked at his half-brother.
"I thought you might deduce it, but obviously not." He glanced around, making sure no one was climbing over the wall. "When you have a mother like mine, it tends to distort your opinion of women. Stefan liked to hurt them. I prefer to avoid them."
Eric said,
"Oh."
Manfred laughed.
"If we survive, I'll tell you what. You can do me a service. I'll marry some prize the prince picks for me, and you can father the next heir to the barony of Darkmoor. It'll be our secret, and I suspect the lady in question will thank me for sending you to her bedchamber." Eric laughed as a flight of arrows sped overhead. I don't think my wife would approve. Then he said, "There's something you should know."
"What?"
asked Manfred. "You have a nephew."
"What?"
"The girl Stefan raped, Rosalind. She bore his baby."
"My gods," said Manfred. "Is it certain?"
Eric said, "Just one look. He's a von Darkmoor." Manfred said, "Well, that changes things."
"How?"
asked Eric. "For certain, one of us must survive, else the lad will be left to mother's tender mercies." Eric laughed. "Only if you tell her." "Oh, she'll find out eventually. Mother may be crazy, but she's well connected and enjoys her intrigues." He lowered his voice as if someone might overhear.
"There are moments I think father's seizures were mother's doing."
"You think she poisoned him?" Manfred said, "Sometime get me to tell you mother's family history. Poison played a large role in her great-grandfather's rise to his title." A huge boulder slammed into the citadel, then rocking the outer keep wall. "Well," said Manfred as he brushed off the dust, "seems our guests have found a catapult." Eric glanced over and saw the war engine had been dragged out into the middle of High Street. He motioned for a soldier and said, "Get word to Sergeant Jaddow to have that catapult taken care of." Another boulder came slamming into the wall, and the soldiers in the street beyond the moat let out a cheer. "Fast!" The soldier ran into the keep. Manfred said, "It's pretty straightforward, isn't it?"
"What?"
"They knock a hole in the wall, fill up the moat with whatever they can throw in, and come swarming over."
Eric said, "Basically."
"Well, let's make it interesting," said Manfred. He signalled to another of his soldiers and said, "Tell Sergeant McAfee to release the oil."
The soldier ran off.
Eric said, "Going to fire the moat?"
"Why not?" said Manfred.
Eric sat back. "How long can you keep the oil burning on the moat?"
3-4 hours.
Another boulder slammed into the wall, and Eric said, "Jaddow!" As if hearing Eric's voice, a catapult atop the central keep fired, releasing a half-dozen barrels of oil. They came crashing down around the catapult in the street, drenching the machine and its crew. The enemy catapult crew began to run. The oil spreading in the street quickly reached one of the many fires nearby, and suddenly the war engine was ablaze. Eric's men on the walls of the citadel let out a cheer.
Eric said, "Well, that's that."
Manfred said, "When the oil in the moat is burned out, they'll start filling it in again."
"That'll keep 'em out until sunrise, though."
"Yes," said Manfred, "but it still doesn't solve one problem." The brothers looked at each other, and at the same moment they both said, "The Eastern Gate."
Pug said, "Rejuvenation is all fine and wonderful, but I'm tired." Tomas said, "I feel I need to sleep."
Kalis said, "Men are dying."
Tomas looked at his son and said, "I know. Even though the Lifestone is no more, there's a very large army attempting to sack Darkmoor."
Kalis said, "Even if he's free now of the demon's control, by reputation Fadawa is not one to just quit and quietly withdraw."
He sighed.
"Only we in this room and a few others know of the real stakes, but now we have a cunning, dangerous leader who still has most of his army intact, and he controls most of the Western realm."
Pug said, "This won't end quickly."
Miranda said, "At least we can get the Tsar out of the war."
Pug said, "If I can convince them what Hanam told me was true."
Tomas said, We can only try.
How do we get there? Asked Nakor.
We don't, said Pug. Tomas and I will go to Darkmoor. Unless we end this battle, there's no reason to take the rest of you into harm's way. Kaelis said,
Remember, I'm the prince's man.
Miranda said, And you're not leaving me here. Nakor motioned to Sho Pai and Dominic, then grinned and shrugged.
Us too.
Pug's eyes widened, and he let out a slightly exasperated breath. Very well. Gather around. Miranda turned to the leader of the Oracle's servants and said, Thank you for your help. The old man bowed and said,
No, we thank you for saving us.
Miranda hurried to Pug's side, and the magician said, Hold on. They all held hands, and suddenly they were standing in the courtyard of Villa Beata at Sorcerer's Island. This isn't Darkmoor, said Miranda. No, said Pug. I've never been to Darkmoor. So unless you want to materialize in the middle of the battle or inside a stone wall, you'll give me an hour. Gatis hurried out of the house and welcomed them.
Hot food will be ready shortly, he said,
ushering them inside. Tomas took aside Pug and said, Is this where you live? Most of the time, said Pug. Looking around the lovely estate, with the soft summer breeze from the ocean blowing across the meadows, he said, I should have visited you a long time ago. Pug said, We've changed. Until this morning, you couldn't bring yourself to leave Elvendar. Tomas said, We've both lost a great deal. Even though my parents were fortunate and lived long lives, everyone else we knew as boys in Crydee has long since passed. But you, to have lost your children. Pug nodded. I sensed over the last dozen years or so that I would outlive both of them, as Gamina and William aged, and I didn't. Pug looked down at the ground and was silent for a moment, lost in thought. Then he said, Even though I expected it, the pain is still very real. I'll never see my children again. Tomas said, I think I understand. The two old friends stood quietly for a time, and Pug remained motionless. Then Pug looked up at the stars. It's such a vast universe. Sometimes I feel so insignificant.
If what Nakor suspects about the nature of that universe is correct, we are, all of us, at once insignificant and important.
Pug laughed. Only Nakor could come up with that. Tomas said, You've known him a while. What do you make of him? Pug put his hand on his friend's arm and led him to the house. I'll tell you while I work on getting us to Darkmoor. He's either the biggest confidence man in history, or the most brilliant and original mind I've ever encountered. Tomas said, Or both? Pug laughed. Or both, he agreed, as they entered the house. Pug moved his hands in a circle, and a huge sphere of bluish light, shimmering with golden highlights, appeared. Taller than a man, it was as wide as a 6-passenger coach.
What is it? Asked Miranda.
It's what is going to take us to Darkmoor, Pug said. I don't know enough about Darkmoor to get us anywhere safely within sight of the city. If I don't have a pattern to fix on, a location I know well enough, well, let's just say it's too dangerous.
I know the procedure, said Miranda. I thought we were coming here to get one of those Surani devices.
No good, said Nakor, taking his out of his bag. Unless you've got it set for a place known to you.
He shook it.
If it still works.
He laid the device aside. Nakor grinned.
I'll fly with you in your bubble.
How do we get in? Asked Miranda.
"Just step inside," said Pug, and did so. They followed him. I had to dig up the spell to make this thing, but once I remembered how to do it, he waved his hands and the sphere lifted off the ground. "It's easy." Gatiss waved goodbye as the four friends flew high above the roof of the estate, and the sphere turned on a long, curving flight toward Krondor. "It's easier if I follow landmarks I know, like the King's Highway."
"How long to get to Darkmoor?" asked Kalis.
"We'll arrive a little after dawn," said Pug. They sped across the sea, 100 feet above the tops of the Whitecaps. As the last of Midcamia's three moons sank into the west, the pre-dawn sky to the east lightened. A breeze blew, but they were comfortable inside the sphere. They stood in a circle, each with just enough room to move slightly. Miranda said, "It would be nice if we could sit." Pug said, "After this is done, I'll happily loan you the volume from which I got this spell, and if you can modify it to put seats in it, feel free." Nakor laughed. "How fast are we going?" asked Tomas.
"As fast as the fastest bird," said Pug. "We should be over Krondor in an hour."
The time passed, and they watched as the sky turned from jet black to dark grey. As morning approached, they could see the spindrift on the tops of the waves below, grey upon grey as the sea churned beneath them.
"Are you sure that demon is dead?" asked Nakor.
Pug said, "He's dead. Water is anathema to his kind. He was powerful enough to withstand it for a while, but not from that depth with the wounds Tomas gave him."
"Look," said Miranda. "Krondor."
Pug had them coming in a direct line from Sorcerer's Isle, so they approached the prince's city from almost directly west.
"Oh, gods," said Miranda.
Across the horizon, where once a large city had teemed with life, only a lifeless black spot on the horizon loomed. Even at this hour of the morning, the city should have been alive with lights as workers made their way along the streets in the pre-dawn gloom. Boats should have been leaving from the fishing village outside the northern wall, and ships departing for distant ports should have been setting sail.
"There's nothing left," said Nakor.
Kalis said, "Something's moving." He pointed up the coast, and in the murky light they could see a large company of horsemen moving along the sea road.
"It looks like some of the Queen's army has deserted," said Chopai.
"Now that they're free of the demon's control, that should become more commonplace," said Pug. As they sped over the outer breakwater of Krondor Harbour, the masts of burned ships stuck up above the bay, like a forest of blackened bones reaching for the sky. Beyond the water, everything was burned beyond recognition. The docks were gone, as were most of the buildings. Here and there, a portion of a wall stuck up, but mostly it was rubble. The prince's palace was recognizable from its position atop the southern point of the harbour, high atop the hill that originally gave the first prince of Krondor command of the harbour.
"It'll be a long time before anyone uses that harbour again," said Kalis.
Tomas put his hand on his son's shoulder. He knew the destruction of the city he had sworn to protect burned deeply. He also knew that Kalis, better than anyone, understood what had been achieved by the destruction of the Lifestone. Yet he recognized the pain Kalis felt over the dear price paid by so many. Pug willed the sphere along the King's Highway. For mile after mile they witnessed wholesale destruction. Every farm and house was burned, and so many bodies lined the way, the buzzards and crows couldn't fly for their gorging. Dominic said, "We must get as many clerics as we can to come here.
for plague will certainly follow such carnage. Nakor said,
All of the Order of Arch-Indar will help.
Miranda said, All two of you. Even in the midst of such destruction, Pug found it almost impossible not to laugh. Tomas said, Many of the priests will have perished during the destruction of the city. Kalis said,
Not really. We passed word to the various temples months ago, and slowly they've been getting their clerics to safety. Duke James knew we would need as much help after, if we survived.
Miranda said, And it helps to stay on the good side of the temples. Pug said, In all my concern over the threat from the Emerald Queen and the demon, and our fears over the Lifestone, I lost sight of the simple fact that the kingdom has been invaded by a very large army. Kalis said,
I didn't.
He pointed ahead. Look. They were entering the foothills of the mountains, and Pug saw a sea of campfires, small shelters, and an occasional command tent. Then they were suddenly speeding over a huge command pavilion, the size of a large house. The closer they got to Darkmoor, the more mobilization they saw.
My gods, said Tomas, I've never seen such an army. Even during the Rift War, the Serrani never threw more than 30,000 men into the field, and never all in one place.
Kalis said, They brought almost 250,000 men across the sea. Dispassionately, he said, This, below, is the half we haven't killed yet.
So many deaths, said Nakor.
He sighed with a heavy note of sadness.
And for no good reason.
Tomas said,
Pug has heard me ask more than once if there was ever a good reason for war.
Freedom, said Kalis, preserving what is ours.
Pug said, Those are good reasons to resist. Even those aren't good enough reasons to start a war. As the terrain rose, Pug kept the sphere at an even height. But as they found more and more men below, pointing at them, and some starting to shoot arrows, Pug elevated the sphere. At cloud level, they had a panorama of the battlefield below.
Incredible, said Dominic.
An army of 80 or 90,000 men lay sprawled below them, like ants climbing up a hill. At the top of the hill was the city of Darkmoor. The Foulberg and most of the city seemed to be in the enemy's hands, and the fighting throughout the remainder of the city was fierce.
Can we stop it? Asked Miranda.
Kalis said, I doubt it. The invaders are stuck on the wrong side of the ocean with no food. He glanced at Pug and said, Unless you have some magic means of removing them back to Navindus.
Pug said, A few at a time, perhaps, but nothing like this.
Tomas said, Then we shall have to stop the fighting and sort it all out after men are no longer killing one another.
Do you see the Tsar? Asked Pug.
Tomas pointed to a corner of the city near the southwest, where a small market was packed with the huge green riders. Pug stopped the sphere and said, Let's see if we can get their attention. He lowered the sphere slowly, and as soon as the first Tsar saw it, they loosed their arrows at the humans. But the arrows struck the walls of the sphere and bounced off, and Pug continued to lower the sphere slowly. And after it was clear no immediate threat was offered by the device, the arrows stopped. Pug landed the sphere before a group of riders, the centermost of whom wore a particularly splendid horsehair-plumed helmet, and who carried an ornate shield and an ancient-looking sword. Pug said, Get ready in case this doesn't work. When the sphere vanished, Pug spoke in the language of Yabon, closely related to the Navindus dialect.
"I seek Jatuk, Shah Shahan of all Asar."
"I am Jatuk," said the impressive rider. "Who are you, wizard?"
"I am called Pug. I have come to you to seek peace."
The Sar's expression was alien, but Pug sensed he was being regarded with suspicion.
"Understand, we are bound by oath to the Emerald Queen, and cannot make a separate peace."
Pug said, "I bring word from Hanam."
The reptilian face then proved quite expressive, as shock was clearly revealed in his features.
"Hanam is dead. He died upon the world of my birth."
"No," said Pug. "Your father's lawmaster used his arts to seize the mind and body of a demon, and in that body he came to this land. He sought me out and we spoke. He is now dead, but his soul is back on Shyla, riding with the Sky Host."
Jatuk urged his mount forward, and when he was right before Pug, he looked down, a towering presence.
"Say what you will."
Pug began, speaking of the ancient war between good and evil, the insanity of the priests of Arsart, and the betrayal of the Sar by the Pantathians. At first the Sar warriors appeared dubious, but as Pug spoke he told them what Hanam had told him to say. He concluded,
"Hanam said to tell you that you must know, as will Shadu, your lawmaster, Chiga, your cupbearer, and Monis, your shield-bearer, that all I have said is true. The honor of your race demands you accept the truth, and the betrayal of your people is more than just lies. The Pantathians and the Emerald Queen and the demons all have robbed you of your home world. They were the ones who destroyed Shyla and took from you forever your birthright."
Consternation was the reaction among the Sar.
"Lies,"
said one.
"Clever falsehoods fashioned by a master of evil arts,"
said another. Jatuk held out his hand.
"No, there is a ring of truth. If you are what you claim, if you have words from Hanam, then he must have told you one thing to let me know this is no clever lie."
Pug nodded.
"He said to remind you of the day you came to serve your father. You were the last of your father's sons to serve. All your brothers were dead. You trembled in anticipation of meeting your father, and there was one who took you aside and spoke softly into your ear to tell you all would be well."
Jatuk said,
"This is true, but name the one who comforted me."
"Kaba, your father's shield-bearer, who told you what to say to your father. He said you were to say, 'Father, I am here to serve the race, to avenge my brothers, and to do thy bidding.'"
Jatuk leaned back, turned his face to the sky, and screamed. It was an animal sound of pure rage and anguish.
"We have been betrayed!"
he roared. Without saying another word to Pug, he turned to his companions.
"Let it be known, our bond is severed. We serve no one but the Sar. Let death be the reward for those who have wronged us. Death to the Pantathians! Let no snake survive! Death to the Emerald Queen and her servants!"
Suddenly, Sar riders were heading back toward the city gate, and Jatuk said,
"Human, when this is done, we will seek you out and make our peace. But there is a terrible debt of blood that must be paid."
Tomas said, "Shah Shahan, your warriors have known years of fighting. Put down your weapons. Withdraw from this fight. An army marches to this city to drive out the invaders. Step aside and let your wives and children know their fathers are returning to them alive." Holding his sword like a live thing, Jatuk's eyes seemed alight.
This is Tul Masok, blood drinker in the ancient tongue. More than any other thing, it is the mark of my office and the badge of my people's honor. It will not be put aside until this wrong is righted.
Pug said,
Then know the Emerald Queen is dead. She was destroyed by a demon.
Jatuk looked as if he could barely contain himself.
Demon? Demons destroyed our world?
I know, said Pug, and the demon is also dead.
Then who is there to pay the price?
Demanded the Shah Jahan. Tomas put away his sword. No one. They're all dead. If there are any Pantathians alive, they are hiding under the rocks of a distant land. The only ones left living are the victims, the tools, the dupes. The Tsar leader screamed in frustration to the skies.
I will have my revenge!
Pug shook his head. Spare your people, Jatuk.
I will have blood for blood!
Tomas said, Then go, but leave this city in peace. Jatuk pointed his sword at Tomas.
My soldiers will depart, and no more will we trouble this place. But we are a nation without a home, and our honor is stained. Only by blood can we cleanse that stain.
He turned his horse in the direction of the city gate, and with a hard kick sent the giant mount heading for it. The rest of his company followed after, and while the war in the city raged on, the southwest corner of Darkmoor was suddenly quiet. From behind the barricade, a voice said,
Are they gone?
Pug motioned, and Owen Greylock climbed over a pile of furniture, grain sacks, and part of a wagon bed.
Magician, said Owen, I think we owe you thanks.
Pug said, No thanks needed. They're still fighting.
If you got rid of the Tsar, we thank you.
Owen shook his head.
Damn, but they are a handful.
Well, they're the invaders' handful, said Tomas. They've been told of their betrayal, and they're not happy. Owen smiled.
That I can imagine. I've only seen a few Tsar up close, and they don't strike me as having much of a sense of humor.
He turned to the men behind him and said, Spread out, and see if you can find any more of our lads. The citadel is under attack, and I mean to hit the enemy from behind. Tomas pulled his sword.
I may be of some help.
Glad to have you, said Owen. He glanced up and down Tomas's impressive 6 inches over 6 feet, and said,
How do you keep all that white clean?
Tomas laughed.
It's a long story.
Tell me after the battle, said Owen, motioning for his small band of soldiers to follow him to the fighting around the citadel. Pug said, We'll see you later. Tomas asked, Where are you going?
Inside the keep, to see if I can end this madness.
Tomas nodded, turned and ran alongside Owen Greylock. Pug motioned for the others to hold hands. He fixed his vision upon the distant citadel, and then they all vanished. Manfred and Eric both looked up as a shout came from above.
What now?
Asked Eric, pulling his sword. Men on the roof shouted, but now the tone was surprise rather than alarm. Manfred pulled his own sword and stepped between Prince Patrick and the door, in case the citadel had been breached. Reaching a hall at the base of the keep's old central stairwell, Eric saw Kaelis hurrying down the stone steps, with Nakor, Miranda, and the others behind. Eric grinned.
Captain!
Kaelis returned his smile and said,
Captain, Eric said, "I am so pleased to see you. How did he get here?"
Kaelis pointed to Pug.
Eric said, "Magician."
He looked relieved.
"Is there anything you can do?"
Pug said, "Yes, I could kill every man outside the wall, but that includes any number of kingdom soldiers fighting house to house. I would rather think of a way to stop the killing. The demon who led the Emerald Queen's army is dead. The lifestone is no more. There's no more reason for fighting."
Eric said, "Tell that to those murderers out there."
Pug said, "That's the problem. Even if I did, would they listen?"
Kaelis said, "No. As I said, they're hungry and they know what's behind them. They have only one way to go, ahead."
Eric said, "If this demon you talked about is dead, what about the Emerald Queen?"
"She's been dead for months," said Pug. "We'll explain later."
"What about Fadua? Maybe we can negotiate a truce with him? He's a murderous bastard, but he'd know the old truce terms of Navindus," said Eric.
Kaelis said, "Right now, Fadua's got a very angry Saar army looking for someone to vent that anger on. He's their most likely candidate. If he's half as smart as I think he is, he's already looking for a place to hole up in for the winter."
Nakor said,
"Winter?"
Pug said, "Yes."
Nakor pushed past Kaelis and said to Eric,
"Your original plan was to hold this army here until winter, right?"
"Yes. We knew that once the snows came, they'd be forced to withdraw."
Nakor turned to Pug.
"If we go to Stardock, can you bring us back here?"
"Yes," said Pug.
"Why?"
"No time to explain. Just do it."
Pug looked at Miranda, Kaelis, and the others, and shrugged. He put his hand on Nakor's shoulders, and they vanished.
"What was that about?" asked Patrick, as he and Manfred entered the hall.
Kaelis said,
"Highness, Baron,"
and nodded in greeting.
"Captain," said Patrick, "I hope you bring us some good news."
"Well, for one thing, the major threat to all of us is now over."
Patrick said, "The lifestone is safe."
Kaelis said,
"It is no more. It is safely undone and can no longer be used to harm anyone."
Patrick said, "Thank the gods."
Every member of the royal family knew exactly what the stakes were, since the lifestone had been discovered under Sethanon 50 years before.
"I feel like ordering a celebration."
The thunder of a catapult above, firing on the attackers, added a counterpoint to his next remark.
"That just may be a bit premature. We're waiting for the armies of the East."
Manfred put his hand on Eric's shoulder.
"My brother and I were having an argument about who was going to go open the eastern gate and let the armies of the East in to save us. Do you have a better plan?"
Kaelis said, "No, but I hope Nakor does."
Miranda said, "I'm going to the roof to see if the armies of the East are outside the eastern gate."
She looked at Manfred and Eric like a couple of slow children and said,
"It wouldn't do to go get yourselves killed opening the gate if the armies of the East weren't on the other side, would it?"
Eric and Manfred exchanged startled looks, but Miranda was already mounting the stairs to the top of the keep.
Kaelis said, "I'll be back, my lord captain," and hurried after her.
They reached the top of the old keep, a relatively small area of the large citadel. Two lookout positions were manned, directing fire from two large catapults located on a roof segment 12 feet below. Miranda looked to the east and began a soft, almost inaudible chant. Then she opened her eyes wide, and Kaelis was surprised to see they had changed. Deep amber with vertical slits, they now resembled a bird of prey's.
She surveyed the horizon, and after a moment closed her eyes and rubbed them. And when she opened them, they were normal again. She said, "The armies of the East are moving in stately fashion toward the city. I would wager they might get here by sundown. More likely, tomorrow at dawn." Kalis swore. "If we survive all this, remind me to have some sharp words with the king about the sense of alacrity of some of his eastern nobles." He leaned over the edge of the wall and looked down as the fighting continued unabated. Men died as they attempted to fill the moat, others as they attempted to prevent them.
"This is all so pointless!"
Miranda put her arms around his waist and said, "You can't save them all." Kalis turned to take her in his arms.
"I've missed you so very much."
Miranda said, "You know that I'm going with Pug."
"Yes, I know."
"He's my other half. I've hidden much of my life from you, and some day, when there's time, I'll tell you the truth of who I am, and why I've lied to protect my secrets. But what I say to you now is the truth. I love you, Kalis. You are one of the best men I've known in a very long life." Kalis looked at her, studying her features as if trying to memorize them.
"But you love Pug more."
She nodded. "I don't know if more is the way I'd say it. He's what I need. I am what he needs, though he hasn't discovered that yet. He's still got too much pain locked away." Kalis nodded and held her so her face was against his chest.
"William,"
he said softly.
"And Gamina. She and James stayed in Krondor."
Kalis closed his eyes.
"I didn't know,"
he sighed. "It will take a while, but he'll heal," she said. Then she stepped back and said, "And so will you." Kalis smiled. "I'm fine." "No, you're not." She poked him in the chest with a finger and said, "You must make me a promise."
"What?"
"When we get done with this war, you must go home to see your mother." Kalis laughed.
"Why?"
"Just do it. Promise." He shrugged.
"Very well. I'll go home with my father, and I'll visit my mother. Anything else?"
"Yes," she said, "but I'll tell you later. We need to tell the prince that help isn't just outside the eastern wall." They returned to the conference room and found everyone huddled around a table. The sound of fighting outside was a constant, low rumble. Miranda told Patrick what she had seen, and the prince said, "Well, we must wait, then, for Pug to solve this mess." An hour later, Pug, Nakor, and a half-dozen men in robes appeared in the hall outside the room. Nakor ran in and said,
"You've got to watch this."
Prince Patrick and the others hurried to where Pug and the other men in robes stood, and one of them said,
"I protest."
"Protest all you want, Charms," said Nakor. "You're the best weather witch on Midkemia, even if you are a pain in the backside. Now do it."
Charms pointed his finger at Nakor.
"You'll stick by our bargain?"
"Yes," said Nakor, "of course. But we must end this fighting first."
"Very well."
The most senior magician from Stardock turned to the other five who had accompanied him and said,
"Once this has begun, I will grow faint. If I falter, you will have to continue for me until I recover."
He turned to Nakor and said,
"I need a table."
"This way," said Nakor.
Charms took in his surroundings as he followed the others back into the conference room. As he passed through the door, he said,
"Excuse me."
The Prince of Krondor said,
"Yes?"
Could you fetch me a burning taper?
Patrick's eyebrows rose, and Manfred said, I'll see to it. Charms opened a bag he was holding. He took out a candle and some other items, and said,
May I have the taper?
The servant produced it, and Charms lit the candle. He drew around it with a waxy stick, then set it down. Closing his eyes, he began to chant. After a moment, a cool breeze blew through the window. Nakor grinned.
It's working.
Miranda went to stand next to Pug and put her arm around his waist.
Why couldn't you do this?
Pug said, I could have done a hurricane, but that's pretty indiscriminate. I never studied much weather magic.
You?
Miranda shrugged.
Me either.
She lay her head on his shoulder and watched. Charms concentrated, and those in the room with magic training could feel the energies growing as the very air became electric. And colder. By the minute the air cooled, and from outside the sounds of battle were punctuated by shouts of alarm. The room grew colder and colder. Finally, Manfred ordered coats brought for those with him. Then the snow began to fall. Shouts of confusion issued on both sides of the moat. Eric said,
Pass the word to our old men that we're doing this, Highness.
Prince Patrick nodded, ordering a servant to pass the word that the unusual weather was part of the defence of the castle. Manfred hurried to the window and said,
Look!
They stood on the large balcony, overlooking the outer bailey and the wall over the moat. A few of the enemy ran across slippery rooftops opposite the keep. Eric saw one man turn, draw his bow, and fire. As Eric started to shout, Down! The arrow struck. Eric's eyes widened in shock as he saw Manfred struck in the neck. Pug unleashed a bolt of energy, and the bowman fell from the roof. Others urged the prince away from the balcony until the area outside was cleared of other archers. Eric caught Manfred as he slid down the inside of the balcony wall. Eric didn't have to examine his half-brother to know he was dead. Holding Manfred, Eric quietly said, Damn. Within an hour, it was clear that the attacking army was withdrawing in confusion. The defenders on the walls of the citadel, having heard the weather was the prince's plan, cheered. Charms began to go weak at the knees, and Pug helped him to a chair, while another magician took over the continued manipulation of the weather. Prince Patrick turned to Pug as a servant rushed forward with some spiced wine for the weakened Charms, and asked, How big an area does this storm cover?
About 5 miles in every direction, but we can enlarge it if you'd like.
Patrick shook his head in wonder.
How long can you make it last?
Pug smiled. That depends on how many magicians I need to drag up here from Stardock. Patrick ran a hand over his face. Fatigue had left dark circles under his eyes.
Cousin Pug, he said. Pardon the observation, but are you younger than I remember?
Pug smiled. It's a long story. I'll tell you tonight. For another hour, snow fell in continuing flurries, until it was knee-deep in drifts along the walls of the city. The sky was completely grey, and birds sat in confusion on the walls of the citadel, undecided if they should be heading south. Then a band of men came trudging down the boulevard, and Eric looked out to see they were led by Owen Greylock, with Tomas at his side. Owen shouted up,
Will you lower the drawbridge? It's damn cold out here!
Eric laughed in relief,
leaned over the balcony and shouted,
"Lower the drawbridge!"